This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Well, today's a really big day for Maui's Kahului Airport. The new car rental facility threw open its doors this morning. It is ready for business. Tim Sakahara, spokesman for the State Department of Transportation, joins us with a look at what this means. Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's a great day, in fact. We're very excited to have the CONRAC, is what we call it, the Consolidated Rental Car Facility, open at the Kahului Airport today for all thousands of people that rent a car sometimes every day on average, and things. It's a great, beautiful facility. It's adding to the efficiency, it's environmentally friendly, and it's just an overall huge modernization project for the airport system.
Now, I have to admit, when I was there about a year ago, I had a crappy experience, and so I'm looking forward to go back to see this. I've seen the pictures and the video, and it just looks terrific.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you're not alone, and that's one of the reasons that we wanted to make projects like this happen. And in this case, you know, before, when people would come out and they'd have a car rental reservation with whatever company they had to wait around on the curb, they had to wait for their specific company shuttle bus to come around, they got circled around to a location off property. It just added to the time and somewhat of an inconvenience for people. Now, no matter which company you're working with, you'll come out of the main terminal, you'll get on this beautiful electric tram, and it'll take you straight shot about a half a mile to the new rental car facility, where it doesn't matter which company you're on, you just ride the tram and it drops you all off right there where they're all the rental car counters are located at the end of the tram. So it's much more simple. It's a huge facility. It's very beautiful as well.
It's three stories,
it's
right?
It's three stories, exactly. It adds 4,400 total parking spaces, 700 of which are dedicated for employee parking. But it's great for efficiency-wise, too, because now instead of having them all scattered around in different areas, they're all under one roof. For the rental car companies, too, there's 72 fueling stations right there. They have 12 car wash stations and 12 bays for mechanics to work on the cars. So it's convenient for them as well. So it's efficient all the way around.
And this has to help with just the traffic and, you know, as far as the parking. I mean, there's no public parking in that facility, but it does ease things for the other areas, right?
It does open things up. And, yeah, just for the – another side benefit of it is that it just relieves a lot of congestion. There is more than a couple dozen shuttle buses for the rental car companies that were just constantly circling the property. You know, that adds to some of the congestion. It takes the adds more vehicles to the roadways, and those are fossil fuel burning buses as well, so it kind of added to the pollutants in the air. Now those will all be gone, so there'll be fewer vehicles circling, and it'll help for the environment too, because the tram is electric, powered by the solar panels on the airport property as well, so that's less of a oil-based burning vehicles that we have there at the airport. So all around it's a very positive project.
And you know, we watched it under construction, and that in itself was, you know, an issue, but you just returned from there, and I don't know, so what was your takeaway, you know, as you were getting back to come back to Honolulu?
Well, we're thrilled to say that the facility and the tram itself was built on time and on budget, which isn't always the case in Hawaii when you're looking especially at transportation vehicles like a train. So that's very positive, and we're very excited about that. There's always a transition. So one thing we do want people to know is, especially the locals, right? They've been doing it the way they renting a car and doing that for decades, the same system. So, you know, for the tourists, they come in, they don't know any better anyway if it's their first time to Maui. So they'll figure it out and follow the signs, get on the tram and go. But some of the locals might be set in their ways and kind of think, oh, wait, I always went here for the shuttle. Now you don't need to do that. You go straight to the tram station. The tram station itself has three stops in total. There's two at the terminal and then one out at the rental car facility at the counter. So people need to be aware of that. It takes about 6 minutes just to go round trip. It's not terribly long. It's only a half mile route, but it is necessary. Obviously, if people have their luggage or elderly or kids and you know, all that thing, I mean, it is necessary to have that tram take them to the facility.
Yeah, and I imagine there's going to be a shake down period. But I was just reading some of the facts on the fact sheet here, and it says this tram was manufactured in Sweden, assembled in San Jose. So if there are any issues with it, are we going to be good to go as far as, you know, any fixes? You have people who are trained to maintain this thing?
Yeah, so Schwager Davis Inc. is the company that was contracted to put it all together and deliver it to Hawaii, which they did and have done a great job. And they have a staff of over a dozen people that are on Maui full-time working on it. There'll be at least one tram working from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily. And that could be extended if there's any delayed flights or anything like that, any operational impacts. During the peak hours during the day, we'll have two trams going simultaneously to kind of cut down the waits for people, especially when it gets crowded. During the off-peak hours and things like late at night, I mean 9, 10 p.m. and things, so there'll be only one tram running. But again, it's very flexible. So if we see any operational impacts like planes coming in late or early and things, and we need to ramp up and get two trains going at once, we can. We're very good at adjusting when necessary.
Okay, and Maui's really the second busiest airport, right, in the state?
Second busiest airport in total in the state. 7 million total passengers flew in and out of Kahului Airport last year alone. Mm-hmm. And actually, Kahului Airport rents the most rental cars of any of the airports
Does
in the
it?
State, even more than Honolulu. Yeah, yeah. So actually, there are a lot of theories on that. I mean, you know, Honolulu has a lot of public transportation that kind of really gets you anywhere and everywhere on the island. Maui definitely rents the most cars out of any state airport, which is why we're happy to deliver this one first.
Yeah, big day for Maui. Okay, so what about Honolulu? When do we get our car rental facility going?
So we're excited about the Honolulu car rental facility as well. It's in the process now. It's over halfway finished completion. And it'll add the same kind of efficiencies. There won't be a train in Honolulu just because of the layout, but there will be one shuttle bus that you can get on for any of the major rental car companies. So it won't matter what company you're on. You just get on the rental car shuttle, which will be run by electric vehicles as well, also powered by the solar panel. So that's great for the environment. And that is, it's up and running now. The construction itself will be done in early 2021, and then the rental car companies need some time to go in and make their own improvements, several months, in fact, to go and make it their own, add up their own signage, computers, furniture, facilities, make it the offices and counters and everything. So we're anticipating opening it up in 2021 at the Daniel K. Inouye International Airport.
Is there anything that travelers need to know with the upcoming Memorial Day holiday? I mean, as far as parking, because I know parking has always been a challenge and has gotten more challenging.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, really with the Memorial Day holiday, that is the start of the busy peak summer travel season. And so we always encourage people to plan ahead and try to get dropped off at the airport if possible. Because there is a limited amount of parking stalls at Honolulu International specifically. That's the one where people should really try to consider getting dropped off. Because, yes, there are a limited amount of parking stalls. Also, we want people to know, you know, with the addition of the ANA, the All Nippon Airways A380, those planes carry 500 plus passengers a shot. Southwest entering the market, which is all fantastic stuff, but a lot more people are traveling. So we want people to know they should give themselves extra time to get through those TSA checkpoints as well.
Okay.
There are 9 checkpoints around Honolulu, but they may not all be open at the same time. They kind of fluctuate depending on flights and schedules
right.
and peak times.
So plan ahead.
So always plan ahead, especially international flights. They should really give themselves 3 hours, but even those domestic flights, 2+ hours, I would suggest to be safe, if not 3, just in case. And if you're coming to park, definitely give yourself extra time, because sometimes you may have to circle around the parking lot a few times, and of course that takes time.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Tim Sakahara, spokesman for the State Department of Transportation, talking about the upgrades to the Maui Airport and our plans for Honolulu. We'll be right back. This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz.
Unihoa, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, uahu, umulokai, ulanai, umau, ukahoolawe, uhawaii.
In today's backyard quiz, we're thinking about a resident of Hawaii's waters that carries its own light source. It's a cephalopod, about 2 inches long. It lives in shallow waters around the islands. It's mostly brown with some iridescent green and blue spots, with 8 arms and 2 long tentacles. Like others of its genus, it has a specialized body cavity that's home to bioluminescent bacteria called Vibrio fishery. Now, these give off a concentrated light that acts as a kind of underwater flashlight built into the creature's body. It uses the light as it hunts for food at night and spends its days buried in the sand in shallow coastal waters. Now, the creature and its resident bacteria are a classic example of a symbiotic relationship. We're looking for both its English and Hawaiian name. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets a reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from West Hawaii Dance Theater. The comedic ballet Coppelia features Timur Bortasenkov as Dr. Coppelius this Saturday at Kahilu Theater in Waimea on Hawaii Island. Tickets at kahilutheater.org.
Kaka'ako Rising, it is move-in day for many families fortunate enough to qualify to buy a unit in the newest Kaka'ako high-rise. Kekiluhana is the reserve housing that developer the Howard Hughes Corporation built to satisfy state requirements for its luxury developments. Tada Po, Vice President of Community Development, sat down with us after yesterday's blessing of the project.
While it's always exciting to open up a new building, Kekiluhana is special. I mean, it's our reserve housing building, and to see the families, the locals, who are first-time homeowners, right? You couldn't own property to be eligible to buy here. So these are their first homes. So whether it's moving back from the mainland, moving out of mom and dad's house, out of a rental and into ownership, those stories are just, they're endless. As we talk about Ward Village and Kaka'ako being a new urban community, we're having these true families, these young couples, these ones with little kids starting their lives and starting their stories in an urban setting that really didn't exist in Hawaii before.
And I remember going to the news conference that Howard Hughes had when they announced the plans for that area and all and the various high rises and what was in the hopper and what was going to come up first.
Right. And that's, you know, Kekiluhana is our fourth tower that we opened. And we have Ali is currently under construction. We'll break ground on Ko'ula probably later this summer. So all that will continue, but it's also fluid. So over the past probably year and a half, sort of relooked at our master plan and sort of looking at, okay, what got done right? What wasn't? You know, Simon Tracy, our new president, has said, it's sort of like the iPhone. It's really good. We love it, but there's always something better that you can do. And so we need to make sure we're looking at that. So we're actually going through a process right now. And we'll have something up on the web so everyone can participate in it. Where we're looking for public input. We're sort of saying, hey, we all see what Ward Village has become today. But as we think about the future, what more do you want to see with it? And so it's fun to get that public input back in because it's a part of what we put into our planning for the future.
Now, you folks have certainly done a lot over on the end on Ward Avenue. You've taken down Ward Warehouse. The views are taking shape in that area.
Right. And, you know, I said we all grew up loving Ward Warehouse. But as it got taken down, the view planes that opened up to the ocean, we sort of forgot about. You know, you knew that you had some of them from high-rise buildings throughout Makiki and Kaka'ako. But at the ground level now, you can see out to the ocean. You know, the other part of that was opening up Victoria Ward Park in December. And just last night, we did outdoor cinema at the park. So we had almost 700 people in lawn chairs and just on blankets on the grass. To be able to sit at the park right on Oahu Street and look out and see the harbor, see the ocean, that feel of the community while you're in the middle of an urban setting, sort of that openness and peacefulness of live grass under you is an exciting part of the community.
Well, I recall over the holidays you brought out the light show, and I was amazed at the crowds that came for that. I'm just truly amazed.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that we wanted to kick off the park with something exciting. And so finding that what was really a technological art piece was something exciting. So, you know, we've been involved with the biennial. We make sure that arts and culture is a part of the development of the community. So to be able to open the park with that light show proved itself, right? I mean, the photos and the Instagrams and everything else that went along with that really showed how exciting that was. And we'll keep looking at how do you integrate arts culture, the Hawaiian culture, Hawaiian arts, the history of the land into the development and activities that we do at Ward Village, because that grounding from the past is really an important part of our future.
So what's next? I mean, I know you folks have, I think, another application in for that second high rise over on that end.
Yeah, so right now we started construction on Ali'i, which is right sort of next to Whole Foods and Aio up on Queen Street. So we started that last October. Ko'ula is right next to the theater, between the theater and the park, and we'll break ground on that later this summer. Then our next step is we're really planning the rest of the area around the park. You know, so when we started talking about Victoria Ward Park, we really express the importance of it connecting with the development around it. And so we want to make sure that we're really focused on that and how are the commercial spaces, the food and beverage, the stores going to connect to the park so that you have a true park experience. When you're in the park, we don't want you facing a garage, right, or just a wall. We want to make sure that that integration is happening. So that's really what we're working on this year. And then, you know, the other one that we talked about last year that we're looking at now is that elevated walkway across Ala Moana Boulevard. And so with some of the traffic incidents that have happened, we also heard from legislators as well that they want to look at how do we work with the State Department of Transportation to create a safe way for people to get across Ala Moana Boulevard and not have to be in the traffic quite as often.
So where would that be positioned?
So as we see it, it's connecting the park space across and try to land it within Kewala Harbor, maybe closer to Ala Moana Beach Park. You know, ultimately, again, in this master plan, you got to think long term. When the rail station comes, which will be sitting at the top of the park, being able to come off the rail station and connect down through a park into an elevated walkway pedestrian experience into Ala Moana Beach Park, that's really a great long-term future piece that you could see.
Is it sort of kind of going to be like the High Line in New York?
Yeah, I mean, the High Line in New York is obviously one of the models that we've looked at, and that, you know, it's not just going to be a basic concrete structure. We really want to make sure there's a pedestrian experience, benches, landscaping. You know, you're going to have some really, again, neat views of the harbor and out through the ocean through there. So making sure there's a chance for people to just relax, get out of the street level, and enjoy an experience that takes you down to the beach park.
And then how has Howard Hughes dealt with the homeless problems?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I mean, one is within Ward Village, we have a security team that's there 24/7, and that really has provided the safety and ensuring that there weren't any dangerous situations that have gotten created. And that's also prevented individuals from setting up their camps within some of our open space areas. You know, I think they're always looking for the place where they're not going to be harassed to set something up. So the fact that we have a security around has really helped that situation. But in the bigger picture, it's really looking at how do we play a part as a company and as a developer into the homeless issue. And so working with groups like Homemade Hawaii, which does a number of homeless projects, watching what has been happening just from other plans and ideas, like Dwayne Caruso's project down at Kiehi. Simon and I just went down and toured that about a month ago as they moved into their second phase. So finding how can we participate there? You know, it's really, I think as you talk through the issue more and more, it's making sure that there are places for those that need them. And the next step then will be to how to make sure those that need them actually get there, because that's part of some of the tougher part. But playing sort of a role on both sides of that to try to help the overall situation.
Well, you're a former councilman, so, you know, you've heard about not just the homelessness, but the housing crisis. And, you know, one criticism with Howard Hughes and Kaka'ako is that a lot of those high-rises are luxury high-rises, and there's not a lot of inventory for just the average folks who, you know, can afford a home for their family.
Well, again, Keiki Lohana that we're opening up today is a huge example. 375 reserve homes, of which started from $325,000 approximately for a one-bedroom, and I think the top of the three bedrooms was about $560,000. And so we're playing a part in providing that spectrum of homes. The reality is you got to be able to have the money and have the wherewithal to then build a project like that. And that's where our other market projects enable us to build those. But 375 homes at Keiki Lohana, we have another 150 at Ali'i that's currently under construction. So adding 525 affordable homes into our 60 acres is our start. There'll be more, but it's part of, you can't just build affordable housing and not have, you know, the money to do that otherwise. I think those models to build affordable housing are coming along. I mean, you know, you've seen others who are experts in being able to put together the government financing, the Stanford Cars.
Right, Stanford
Christine
Cars.
Camps. I mean, they're fantastic. That's another model to be able to, if you can get the land and then use, whether it's from HHFDC or federal funds and federal tax credits to build affordable housing, that's another way that we're all bringing affordable housing together. But as we're seeing with our projects, it's making it a part of the market homes that are also coming, allows, again, 525 affordable homes to be coming up now.
Well, I know Kamehameha also has property down in that area near Mother Waldron. Stanford's just opening up his project as well, the rentals there. So can you tell us anything about the next high-rises that Howard Hughes might be building? I mean, will they be not high-end luxury?
Well, as we always said, you know, our goal for Ward Village is that it has a spectrum of homes for everyone. And so we'll continue to build market units, but we'll also continue to build affordable units. As we get into our plans of sort of that the next phase of development, it will continue to include that spectrum. And one of the things we're looking at as we open up Keiki Lohana is whether to concentrate the reserve homes into one tower or spread them out amongst the various market towers. And there's pros and cons. A lot of it just goes back to affordability. While you can make the sales price affordable, you also need to make sure that the monthly maintenance fee costs are affordable. And that's one of the benefits of Keiki Lohana, having all 375 of those affordable units together, because you're able to keep the maintenance fees at a reasonable cost. So as we continue to build more affordable housing, we're making sure that not only the sales price, but also the maintenance fees, which is obviously long-term for those owners, are affordable for them.
So how soon will we see you back before the HCDA, the Hawaii Community Development Authority?
Probably by the end of the summer, we'll be in with the next project. And it'll be a market project, but obviously it will require us to have that discussion with HCDA about how will we be fulfilling the affordable housing side of that. You know, working with HCDA and their board has been really good. It's a process where we get to have that discussion with volunteer community members that's who the HCDA board is. And so it's more good input for us in making sure that we're looking at how to properly do affordable housing. So, for example, when we did the 150 units at Ali'i, one of the things that the board suggested to us was decouple the parking, meaning allow a buyer to come in and buy an affordable home without also having to pay for the parking stall. So we actually did that. As we went through those sales of 150, people had the option to buy a parking space or not with their home. What's interesting is just, again, it's life reality for us. Every one of them, even though they're income qualified and maybe income constrained, they all purchased their parking space. So they all said, I still need my car. I think, you know, maybe as we go into the future and more use of ride sharing and when driverless cars come along, we may see a shift in that. But for now, we're seeing everyone still need that parking space. But it adds costs to buying a home. And so if you can find some mobility alternatives, perhaps it's another way to bring prices down.
All right. Well, we'll see you at the HCDA in the summer.
We will. And again, you know, it's always fun to get out and talk about these, because talking about them leads us to getting input. And that's, you know, getting that input. I keep saying we need to make sure we're changing Kakaako correctly. And so making sure we have that input is really important to us.
Okay. Well, Tata Po, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Aloha.
Our guest was Tata Po, Senior Vice President of Community Development for the Howard Hughes Corporation. Today's reality check has us circling back with Honolulu Civil Beat's Nick Ruby. He's been down at federal court digging through the files as the trial for Police Chief Louis K. Aloha prepares to get underway. Good morning, Nick.
Hi, Catherine.
So you have a pretty interesting story involving a journalist from one of the local TV stations here.
Yeah, that's right. So Hawaii News Now reporter Lynn Kawano has been named as a witness in the Kealoha trial, and it appears that it's the Kealohas who put them on their witness list. And what's interesting about that is that federal rules say that if you're a witness, you're not supposed to be in the courtroom as other witnesses are testifying. And now for a journalist like Kawano, that can be a little problematic because that means she really won't be able to cover the trial as it is going on. And so she and her lawyers representing Hawaii News Now filed a motion to try to get her name removed from that list, saying that they think it's their view that the Kealohas are sort of retaliating against her for what they consider to be critical coverage of them and the charges that are against them.
Right, because she's broken a number of stories, different angles on this, dating back to the mailbox theft.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Lynn Kawano has been one of the top reporters on this case. She has had a number of scoops over the years. I mean, again, this is a case that played out for many years from before even the FBI and the Department of Justice began investigating. And Lynn was there pretty much the whole time. I mean, I know that she would go to the federal courthouse and sit outside the grand jury room. Oftentimes, the two of us would be hanging out there together. And she has been one of the more dogged reporters on this case in the Hawaii press. And that, again, that's one of the reasons why she's saying that she feels that the Kealohas are basically messing with her by putting her on the witness stand and trying to keep her out of the courtroom. Now, it should be noted that the Kealoha's attorneys, who I spoke to yesterday, they plan to still keep her on the witness list, and they say that there is a legitimate reason to keep her on that list, saying that the reason for it has nothing to do with her profession as a journalist.
Well, I know you've certainly broke many angles on this story as well, but you know, you and I can both imagine what it'd be like if we had a subpoena and we ended up on somebody's a witness list. It's kind of chilling.
It is, and I mean, having been subpoenaed before, not in this case, but in others over the years and throughout my career, my news organization has fought viciously to keep me off the witness stand, and there's a reason for that. I mean, it can be concerning when somebody wants to put a journalist on the witness stand, because the big fear is that a lawyer will try to, say, sniff out our sources and try to find out how we got the information that we received, particularly if it came from an anonymous source, which in this case, the news media, particularly Hawaii News Now, has relied on some anonymous sources to break some of their stories over the years. I spoke with a communications professor over at the University of Hawaii, who also said that this could be a strategy to sort of disparage the media and the press coverage to basically put the journalist on trial rather than the person who's actually accused of the crime.
So how is this going to get resolved?
Well, there is a hearing scheduled for Thursday, and the judge will decide whether Lynn Kawano will be still on the witness list. I think today we are waiting to see what the Kealoha has put in their official filing that is opposing removing her from that list. Now, it's important to remember that the government and the other defendants in the case who are facing trial have all said they are not opposed to Lynn Kawano not being on that list. It appears that it is only the Kealohas who want her to potentially be placed on the witness stand.
Well, lots of crazy stuff, and the trial hasn't even started yet. Thanks so much, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
That was reporter Nick Gruby with today's Reality Check. Check out the Kealoha stories at civilbeat.org.
I'm Bert Lum. Today on Bite Marks Cafe, we'll get an update on the renovations happening at the Atherton YMCA to create a new innovation center. We'll find out how the University of Hawaii envisions it to be a place to mentor entrepreneurs and incubate new startups. That's today at 6:30 p.m. on Bite Marks Cafe.
My name is Madeline Young, and I'm an attorney and director with Damon Key, Leon Kupchak Hastert, and we've been proud underwriters of Hawaii Public Radio since 1992. Damon Key's founder, Frank Damon, was a strong proponent of public radio, and our firm has followed his lead for decades. Our firm's goal is to continue to support important radio programming for the people of Hawaii.
Hawaii Public Radio Underwriting. Your message heard here.
Aloha, I'm Mark Liddell from the University of Hawaii at Manoa School of Communications. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
There seems to be no end to the political wrangling in Washington. So what's the long view as President Trump looks to get reelected? Well, our contributing analyst Neil Milner is in studio this morning with news of a new survey.
Yeah, hi. Well, no end is, I'm not going to put an end to the no end. It's going to get either more intense or worse, depending on how you say. So everything is pretty fluid right now, maybe even more than usual in between two presidential elections. But what I thought I'd do is just keep adding pieces of the puzzle that build a little bit on a show we did a few weeks ago where we said, if you looked at some recent studies of how counties had voted in the midterms, that there was even more of a trend toward Democrats than we thought, that almost every county in the country voted a greater percentage of Democrats than they had voted before. And the biggest increase were in strong Republican areas. And we said that's a little bit nerve-wracking for Republicans. Today is a study which is sponsored by the Voter Study Group, a bipartisan, nonpartisan group of policymakers and scholars who've been trying to get some hands on this. And they looked at what Americans are thinking now about issues and about politics. And it's a good survey. And we found some pretty interesting things, some of which, again, reinforce some problems for Trump. A lot of it do not. So we can go through some of them if you want. But the first thing is that if you want to take one thing out of this national study, it's no big surprise, polarization. That the polarization is as strong as ever. That hasn't changed since 2016. In fact, it may have gotten stronger. That's not surprising because these things don't change overnight. This has been around for a long time. So that on virtually every issue, Democrats and Republicans have very different views, and their priorities are very different. And most importantly, and including the fact that even though overall the country is much more, not much more, is more optimistic about where we stand now, where our families are, and so on, that's only because there's been a considerable increase among Republicans feeling that way. And so everything else is pretty much is polarized. And of course, in regard to Trump, the extreme polarization on Trump's approval rating. So let me stop there and see what.
We were chatting earlier before the show, and there was this sense, by some out in the community, like, wow, Trump did this, and that's got to be it. I mean, that's unbelievable, right? He's just kind of shaking things up, and you're thinking there's got to be some backlash.
Well, the definition of insanity is keeping doing or thinking the same thing over and over again, and it doesn't work. And I've tried to tell my liberal and progressive friends, every time Trump does something and you say this is the definitive change, you've been wrong. And that ought to teach you something about how this works. And that says something about the nature of the approval rating for Trump that it's important for people to understand because that's lingering. First of all, overall, Trump does not have a high approval rating but that hasn't changed. It's around 40 or 41%. Okay, that's pretty loyal. The fact of the matter, and in some ways, that's a problem for the president, because in this survey, it shows that over time, if you ask these people in this national survey, have you ever approved of Trump? Less than half of them, 49%, have said that at least one time they've approved of what Trump was doing. So this is so there's a good argument to think that there is a ceiling here on how high his approval rating can get. It stayed pretty much the same. Today I was just looking. It's around 40, 41, the composite surveys. But you have to keep in mind two things, one of which is that it's extraordinarily high among Republicans. It's about 86%, and this is about polarization, only 8% of Democrats approve of Trump. The independents are kind of in the middle, the true independents. So that you have this, and what you always have to keep in mind is that it wasn't just the switchers, and we'll come back to them in a second because that's not such good news for Trump here. It's not always those people who switch, say, from Obama to Trump, you know, the blue-collar ones, the ones that we all made the big fuss about because they were strategically located. Overwhelming percentage of Republicans voted for Donald Trump in the last election. So that even though his approval rating isn't very high, and even though he's leaked a little bit of Republican support, and the survey shows that there are fewer who are strongly supportive of his, the fact of the matter is that Republicans, like Democrats, vote for their candidate. And in this day and age, when one of the strong motivations is to screw over the other party, that's a pretty formidable thing. But, and here's one of the interesting things in this survey that's worrisome to the Trump thing, which is something like that worrisome thing about the counties and the Republicans. The group of people who had the biggest decrease in Trump approval, now the majority of them still approve of it, but the biggest decrease is by the non-college white guys, tend to be what we call blue collar. And remember, so they've had the largest drop of all groups in Trump support. And that was a strategic group for him last time. It's certainly not the only reason that Trump won.
But it's a weakening.
It's a weakening. And so with all this fluidity, you know, there still is a difference between how you approve and whom ultimately you'll vote for, because it depends to some extent on the other candidate. But it's pretty clear that Trump still has a very strong, very, very strong approval rating among Republicans. But there's these little disconcerting for the Trump people factors that are there.
So I would imagine then the strategists are looking at this. Okay, where is he weak? Where do we need to you know, what do we need to shore up?
Oh yeah, well, and that's always the case. You know, there's no question that if you consider right now that Trump would certainly have, you know, a decent chance of being reelected. No one should be, for all kinds of reasons. The economy's good, incumbents and so on. You don't know who the Democratic candidate is, and that he may have solid support. But there are the other things that are going on. One of the differences that we don't know very much about yet, we can make some conclusions about it. One of the main reasons Hillary Clinton lost, there's a ton of reasons, you know, mm-hmm. you can, in retrospect, she voter turnout was lower than it had been for Obama among people who would support Democratic candidates, and so turnout makes a difference too. All we know about turnout right now is that initially Democrats were more excited about this election coming up than Republicans. That's kind of even out now. The turnout experts think that the turnout is going to be huge, because Trump inflames passion so much. But it's not at all clear yet which party that turnout is going to benefit. And some of that, of course, depends on what happens between now and then.
Is there anything more on the switchers?
No, there isn't anything more about the switchers. I think that if people want to pay attention to the switchers, there's some strong anecdotal stuff. There's all this stuff now about the farmers getting slammed. But, you know, you can't assume a kind of rationality just based on economics that'll switch them around. First of all, it's fluid. Secondly, people vote for a lot of other reasons for a candidate or not. So that's a possibility. The fact of the matter is that Trump does weird stuff. There's no question he doesn't do weird stuff. But because he does stuff that's weird doesn't mean that it's going to cost him votes. So the switchers, I don't want people just to think about those switchers because there's all kinds of other things that are going to affect this election.
And what about the differences like on the environment?
Well, yes, that's the biggest difference. I guess I should have meant the biggest polarization difference is on climate change, where an immense amount of Democrats say that's a high priority and Republicans don't. That's nothing new either. I mean, these things have become very stable. The issue of climate change became politicized a long time ago when essentially each side reads its own evidence. Frankly, I don't think the Republicans read good science, but that's not the main point here. It's that's a highly polarized issue.
Okay, but still, situation's still fluid.
It's nuts still not ways. To think the situation is still fluid, but I hope I've pointed out a few things that you can watch out for. And I would recommend one website if you want to kind of keep track of this stuff. It's a no-drama website, and that's 538.com. The word is written out because they do some interesting data-related pieces with some smart social scientists who are good writers and good talkers.
All right. Well, thanks for tracking that for us.
Sure.
We've been talking to our contributing editor, Neil Milner, about the new results of a new survey out about changing political attitudes.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Bishop Museum. The exhibition Kini Kekua, Transformative Images, explores how the relationships between images and people can change over time, now through September 2nd, bishopmuseum.org.
In today's backyard quiz, we went looking for the name of a creature that has a light organ, a body cavity where bioluminescent bacteria make their home. Now, the built-in light source allows the animal to look for food at night in shallow waters around the Hawaiian Islands. It points its light organ downward as it hunts and regulates the amount of light that it gives out by controlling the amount of oxygen that goes into the light organ. Now, each morning it expels the bacteria and new bacteria come in to take its place by nightfall. Now, it's one of nature's amazing adaptations, an endemic local species, the Hawaiians call muhe'e. It's commonly known as the Hawaiian bobtail squid. And congratulations to Michelle, who called in. She's on the way to the Honolulu airport. She's a scientist, an artist, who's also caught many a bobtail squid. Thanks so much for that. And that's today's quiz. If you have one, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Finishing strong, that could be said of the choice of the closing show for the Hawaii Opera Theater. HPR's Noe Tanigawa here to talk about La Traviata and what's ahead in HOT's future. Good morning.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Catherine. Nicely done there. I was so happy to meet Andrew Morgan. He's the new director of the Hawaii Opera Theater as of the first of this month. And he comes to us via San Francisco Opera. He worked there for a number of years, culminating in his position as director of development.
So that's exciting then.
I know. We may have some skills we can really put to use here. And we started out, of course, talking about the challenges that opera has, not only in Hawaii, but everywhere. In fact, it's kind of the challenge that classical arts are facing. You know, how to provide enough of the classics that people love while still bridging some new audiences here for these art forms. And Morgan says it's really the balancing act. But one thing they're going to do here in Hawaii is connect more to the local audience, because this has got to be a living art form. Now, you might have heard already, Catherine, that there's a Lili'uo Kalani opera that's already been staged on the continent. We haven't seen it here. And partnerships are another way that HOT hopes to really grow its roots in the community. How can they do that? Maybe local designers, local set designers, local fashion designers. They've done that before with Ann Namba. And it's really a way to put a local stamp on this art form. That's what they're going for. Also, what's interesting is Morgan has really worked in all these different aspects of performance. He's been a performer. He sings. He's been a director. He's worked in the business of it. And he worked for a number of years in something called Pocket Opera in San Francisco. Okay, now that's productions in small venues that get back to the core of what opera is. They strip away a lot of the singing text, and they get back to just the great songs and the musical drama. So can you imagine that? Maybe like
little pop-ups, huh?
Yeah, in Manifest, maybe we hear this very intimate, sort of like human emotions in song. Ideas like that are what really could spark a new audience for this form. And with that projected Blaisdell renovation, you know, we really are going to have to explore some of these alternative venues and stuff. It's been kind of radio silence on that renovation lately. But if you remember, this time last year, after the abrupt departure of their former director, HOT was just discovering itself in deep red ink. $2 million plus. Board and staff hunkered down. By the end of the summer, the debt was about halved. And here's Mr. Morgan on that now.
There have been some financial concerns over the years, and we are facing a deficit this current fiscal year as well.
How great is that deficit?
I really can't say yet. I would want to wait till the financials are done. We still have to the end of this month, plus we have an audit. But, you know, it will not be insubstantial. So, you know, we will have some more rough times ahead, but it's nothing that we can't overcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, kudos to the board and staff of Hawaii Opera Theater. It's not easy pressing on after artistic director Henry Akina, responsible for the modern flowering of opera in Hawaii, left for medical reasons in 2017. The incomparable, huge-hearted Bibi Freitas, the queen of music there, passed last year. But if there's anything that could get our sights on a bold future, it's the production we have coming up, as you said, Catherine.
Yes, strong.
Finishing strong, yes. Here. We've got homegrown talent Quinn Kelsey coming in. Now, this weekend, Quinn will recreate the role he did for the Metropolitan Opera just months ago in New York City this past fall in La Traviata. It's Giuseppe Verdi. It was written in 1853, about mid-career. And Kelsey plays Giorgio German, the father of Antonio. And in the piece I'm going to play for you here, he says, "Come on home, Antonio. Give up this courtesan because she's killing your reputation. And by the way, your sister is trying to get married, and it's kind of messing that up too." That was Robert Merrill, but I'll tell you, Kelsey cuts a fine figure on stage. And you can listen to it. He's not sounding unreasonable or histrionic. I mean, really, there are a lot of human-level emotions in this opera, and that's what made it such a winner over the years. The son, Antonio, is going to be played by Pene Pati, the up-and-coming Samoan tenor. You might have seen
that's
him
right,
in
yes.
Sole Mio. He's got all that personality. And Violetta, the consumptive heroine, she gets the best operas, arias, you know, in every act. She'll be played by soprano Danielle Talamantes. I was talking to HPR's music director, Gene Schiller, about the role. It's tough, it requires drama and real technical versatility, and he chose this version by Anna Moffo. Imagine doing this with your voice.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever heard of Opera for Everyone? You know, it's tonight, and it's HOT's final dress rehearsal, and they do it for students, for families, teachers. I've been to it. A lot of students turn up for this, and everybody's invited, really. If you'd like to go, give them a call. We've got the number here at HPR. The performances are coming up Friday, Sunday, and next Tuesday. There are lanai lectures before every performance. Check them out. Lynn Johnson does a great job there on the Ward Lanai. It's La Traviata, Hawaii Opera Theater, full steam on stage.
Yeah, that's amazing. So ending strong, finishing strong, and then we see what comes with under the direction of the new director.
Right. Next season's been planned. It's announced. It's a lot of classic favorites. And then we'll really see.
Right. So hopefully the community comes out to support their effort.
You got it.
Thanks so much, Noe. We have been chatting with HPR's culture and arts reporter, Noe Tanigawa, about what's ahead for the Hawaii Opera Theater. You can find all her reports online at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Io ti perdoni, l'aria sono io, ma sulla morte il vino in te.
Non lo amo, l'amo, l'angio mio, ma il mio.
A taser is a weapon designed to stun a suspect.
It's the most complicated thing a cop has on his or her belt.
But in police departments across America, tasers aren't always living up to their promise.
So me watching this guy being tased and walking towards us, swinging a knife at us, shocked me.
On the next reveal.
This evening at 7, right after Bite Marks Cafe.
That's it for today. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and tomorrow we look at issues facing our community, from suicides to how best help the mentally ill living out on the streets. Tell us what you think, suggest a story idea, call or talk back line. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the conversation.